painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Today on Artbeat, we talk to Tonya Sina about intimacy directing at the Great River Shakespeare Festival. Tonya is the founder and director of Intimacy Directors International. The organization helps actors and directors handle intimate scenes for the stage and film in a professional manner with high standards of artistry and safety. We talked to Tonya about the need for intimacy directing, what it is, and how she came up with her method. I'm Bill Stoneberg with Tonya Sina on today's Artbeat.
I'm here with Tonya Sina. She's an intimacy director, and she's also the founder and executive director of Intimacy Directors International. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks for being on our show. For those of us who might not know how intimate scenes come together, can you kind of explain what an intimacy director does and how that works?
Sure. So intimacy directors are actor advocates in the room. We're choreographers mainly, but our job is to keep the actors safe when they are having to handle scenes with heightened emotion, like simulated sex or sex or even just kissing or anything that has romantic contact. We give them a protocol to follow so that we can prevent assault and harassment from happening before it happens.
Okay. How did that come about? Did you kind of invent this method, and how did that work?
I invented the method that I use. I invented intimacy for the stage, and I initially researched it in my thesis project when I was in graduate school at Virginia Commonwealth University, way back in the early 2000s. And since then, I've been really workshopping it and developing it, and I really didn't share it with the public until about, really started teaching teachers about 5 years ago.
Okay. Well, how were intimate scenes handled in the past before this?
Before this, they mostly weren't handled at all. They were just sort of, you know, the script would say something like they kiss or they make love. And there was no, a lot of times, not even stage directions, especially in something like Shakespeare. So it was just kind of left in the hands of the actors most often. It was, hey, why don't you guys try something, and then we'll go from there. And then it forces the actors to choreograph themselves. And that's really, really hard to do when you can't see yourself from the outside. And it also forces them to perform intimacy as if it's real when it's not supposed to be real. So before, and as an actress, I experienced that it just was being brushed over or not handled, or if it was being handled very inappropriately. And that's what we're trying to avoid.
Okay. So it really lays down some guidelines and like a structure of how this works then, huh?
That's right.
Okay. You came up with your own method, you said, and you have five pillars. Can you kind of describe the five pillars for us?
Sure. So the five pillars, and, you know, sometimes they go out of order, but the five pillars, it starts with context, where we talk about the story of the intimacy specifically, and we discuss it with the actors, with the director, with the stage manager, everybody's involved, so that everybody knows what's going to happen beforehand. The second pillar is communication. We are constantly communicating. We watch the vocabulary that we use when we're talking about these scenes. We don't speak in slang. We don't try to be graphic. We try to be professional and physiological when we do it. So communication is really, really important for the actors to be able to express their own boundaries. And then that leads us to the third pillar, which is consent. And consent is pretty obvious, but everyone needs to be consenting to everything as we go. And in the past, consent has not been part of the conversation. It was mostly just the director saying, do this, and then the actors would do it. But now we need to make sure that the actors are consenting to every step as we go, which takes an extra 2 seconds to do. And then after consent is established, we choreograph. That's the fourth pillar is choreography. The choreography is set and doesn't change. It's sort of like a container of choreography, and then the actors can relax into it, but they don't get to add moves. They don't get to subtract moves. They have to stick to the plan, stick to the choreography, and it's designed by somebody, so that's not the actor's job to change choreography. And then once I'm gone, the stage manager takes over and makes sure the show runs without me and the choreography stays the same. And then the last pillar is closure, where it involves self-care and making sure the actors can walk away and go home at night and not have to carry this scene with them. Sometimes these scenes are pretty heavy for actors to carry home, and they just want to go home to their families or to their real lives. And so closure is a really important part of being able to walk away in a healthy way from this experience.
Okay, okay. Can you kind of elaborate on closure a little bit? Like, what does that entail? How do you get that?
Yeah, well, honestly, we all have different methods of closure. All of us sort of use a different method. I regularly have a service dog that I take with me, and her name's Daphne. She's a pit bull. But she's my service dog, but she also helps me teach and choreograph. So she would be here, but Delta banned pit bulls as service dogs. So she can't come. But what she does is she sits in the corner of the room the whole time. And then when I tell her to break, she runs around the room and checks in with everybody so that they can get out of their head and they can pet a dog so that they don't feel like they're so serious about it. So it helps get them out of their head. Sometimes we create a ritual that's a good closure, like we're going to high 10 after every scene, or we're going to breathe together and make sure that we walk away from this. Or sometimes it's just decompressing after rehearsal, like get a drink, you know, make sure that you're doing something that isn't the show. Or self-care, making sure that you are getting the mental health care that you need. If you need to see a psychologist or a psychiatrist, making sure that you're taking your meds, making sure that you are, not sacrificing your entire mental health for a sex scene that is going to damage you. So closure is, I think, the most important pillar. It's the thing that makes this a career and not just some kind of weird fetish.
Right. So it helps you get out of that role and back to your normal life.
That's right.
Okay. You had mentioned creating a safe space on and off stage. What does that entail? How do you create a safe space?
There's a lot of different ways you can create a safe space, but I find that I have to be vulnerable as the intimacy director. I have to admit that I can make mistakes. I have to set a tone as soon as I walk into the room with my body language, with my voice. I have to make them know that I can make mistakes, and so they can too. I express my own boundaries, and that encourages them to speak their own boundaries. So, you can create a safe space in a lot of different ways, but the majority of the way you do that is to make sure that you are taking care of every single person that's in that room, which takes a lot of awareness. Nobody can be left behind. It's an ensemble, and so the group needs to all have a voice. It's a group voice, and they all have voices individually. So really a safe space is about allowing actors to have the ability to express their fears, their trepidations about the scene, what they're excited about, what they think is fine versus what they think is not fine. And that is something that is crucial in a creative process like this.
Right, right. I can see how that would be. You also mentioned the difference between consent and permission. Can you elaborate on that a little bit for us?
Absolutely. So permission, which generally has been the way that we've handled these scenes in the past, the director will give permission to the actors to do something. And I'll even give you an example. There was a director that was asking two young people to do something. The director yelled out, "Just grab her boob." And the young actor did. He just reached out and grabbed her, and she wound up and smacked him in the face. And what happened there was, he had permission to grab her, but he did not have consent to grab her. So that's the difference. Is permission can come from anybody in the room. Anybody can give you permission. Producers can give you permission. Directors can. Stage managers can give you permission. But consent can only come from the person who is receiving the touch. Not the person touching. The person receiving the touch can say, you know, so he could have avoided that by just turning to her and saying, may I grab your breast? And she would have said yes or no. She might have said no. And then we could have handled it. But instead, no one asked, and she was assaulted in that moment. And he paid the price, which was a slap in the face. So permission versus consent is really important when we're working with these scenes. And we try to really stress that consent is something that just needs to be woven throughout the process. Right. It should never go away.
Okay. And I know in your talk you mentioned something about when you say no, you can say no, but. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yes. As actors, especially if we've done any improv, the rule is yes and, yes and. So when somebody tells you to do something or gives you an idea or an impulse, your job is to say, yes, that's a great idea, and I add to it. And so that has created a culture of not being able to speak up when something's wrong. And so what we recommend is that, yeah, sure, you want to play along, but if somebody is encroaching your boundaries, you are able to say, no, you can't touch my breast, but you can touch my neck and my chest, and or you can touch the back of me. You can. These are all the places that you can touch, so that it doesn't just sound like a shutdown. It sounds like a, no, thank you, but I have other suggestions for you. And that's what actors want. They have impulses, and they're really great to follow them. And when directors follow actors' impulses, the work only looks more natural.
Right. It almost sounds like this method would bring everyone more together in the process, you know, involve everyone more.
I find that this method creates a very close team, a very close company, a very close ensemble, where everyone really feels like they're taken care of and that they're taking care of everyone else. And I think that that's why we all got into theater in the first place, was for the community.
Right. Okay. And in our current culture with the Me Too movement, you know, and harassment cases coming to light, do you think intimacy directing is more needed now? Or do you think it's just always been needed and we just haven't talked about it?
I think it's always been needed. I think that it couldn't have existed at a certain point, because when the majority of the voices that are being heard are from a certain demographic and other demographics aren't being heard, then we don't get those perspectives. So we weren't getting the perspectives of victims for the longest time. And it wasn't because they weren't saying anything all the time. It was because nobody wanted to hear what they had to say, or they weren't in charge. And so, you know, women were not in charge of Hollywood in the 30s, or even theater and of the arts. You know, women didn't have a role like that as much. They had a different sort of place. And so they couldn't have really stood up for themselves the way they can now, because now we have a language, we are starting to listen to everyone. Everyone's allowed to have a voice, and some people might feel like that's their privileges being taken away, while other people get to have voices. But in reality, it's really better for everyone that way. That you're only going to get more intimacy on stage that is natural versus less when you are actually using a process that works.
Right, and involving everyone in that process. Yeah, definitely. How long do you think it might take before this becomes common practice in the industry?
I think it's already pretty rampant across the country now. I'm pretty proud of how it's become a household sort of name in the theater now. I feel like there's still people, of course, that haven't heard of it or don't know it exists, or they know there's a problem, but they don't know how to fix it. But we've had a lot of exposure, and you know, we're constantly getting bombarded by people who want to learn not only how to perform it, but how to teach it, how to choreograph it. So, you know, I feel like my goal is to make sure that it's a norm in the industry before I die, which I think is I think I can pretty much accomplish. I feel pretty good about that goal. That was my goal a long time ago, and now I feel like I'm much closer than I was 10 years ago. So for me, I feel like now people are not only listening, they understand why this is necessary. It's not just something some girl made up. You know, it's about everybody. It's not about just women. It's not about just one certain thing. It's not about blaming men. It's about making the entire industry safer and other industries too.
Right. Well, and it sounds like you said, not just safer, but you'll get better work, it sounds like, out of it.
Way better work. You get way better work in on stage and off stage when people are consenting.
Right, definitely. And you've worn many hats in theater over the years, you know, with your fight choreography, you know, acting, movement teacher. How much do those roles influence the intimacy directing?
I think they all do. Everything that I've done has culminated to help me with this. The thing that really led me here was that I had a kind of an obsession for chemistry between humans, for what makes people feel attracted to each other. And that was what really led me to it. It fascinated me. I wanted to be able to manipulate that as a director. And that's what I really studied it. So, you know, acting is the study of humans, and that's, this is a huge part of humans that we've just glossed over. It's one of the most important things that we do as people. So it seemed baffling to me that there wasn't already some kind of process in line. But when I first researched it, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. And so having to start from square one was intimidating. And now I wish I could go back and tell that girl that she needed to stick with it, right. Because I you know, I had a lot of times that I was unsure that this was ever going to get past me, and now it's just so amazing that so many people are on board, and so I feel really honored by that, and that the industry is really listening to the victims that have come forward and said, this isn't good enough, we need to make this better for everybody, we need to raise the bar, and we can be better.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So these concepts, you know, do you think that they can be taken to other places outside of the theater, you know, just to other professions or other places out in the world?
Absolutely. In fact, some people have asked me if I teach corporate gigs, which I haven't yet. Maybe one day I'll be able to apply it to someone else. Right now I'm focused on the theater and film, but I think that every single industry has this problem. Not every industry has to kiss people for a living, which seems insane that we don't have a protocol around that, since we have to do so much sexual contact in what we do. But every industry has harassment in it, and every industry has some kind of experience with you know, discrimination. And I think that the movement is bigger than intimacy. It's about listening to people. And I think that that's the thing that's going to save us, if we can just listen to each other and not talk so loud.
Okay, that's very good advice. I like that. What do you think is the most important thing for actors to remember doing an intimate scene?
The most important thing for actors to remember is that they have autonomy over their body, that they are not... they don't belong to somebody else just because they're an actor, just because it's somebody else's show. They still get to say what happens to them at the end of the day. And, you know, some of us have lost jobs for standing up to standing up for ourselves. And maybe that was the best case scenario rather than being stuck in a dangerous situation. But actors, I think, in the past haven't always had the ability to speak up for themselves, or didn't even know that they were being harassed, or didn't know what their boundaries were just because of the way the industry was formed. And I think that it's really important for actors to know that they get to say no if they're being assaulted. That you get to do that. It doesn't mean that you are a bad sport. It doesn't mean that you're difficult to work with. There will be another company to work with. There's always more theater somewhere. And if this isn't the company that accommodates you, then there's another one that will.
Right. And you're probably better off for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. What is the biggest challenge that you've run into as an intimacy director? You know,
the biggest challenge that I've run into is people who don't want to admit that things have been bad in the past. people who refuse to adapt to the times, people who don't want to lose the authority that they have, who are holding on to it with a clenched fist. And that, in my own experiences, has been the thing that slowed this down the most, is people who didn't want to give up the privileges that they had. They want to be able, they wanted to be able to touch young women at their leisure. You know, they didn't want to have that privilege taken from them, because women weren't always thought of as people in that way, that we were there for other people to touch us. So the most difficult thing that I've confronted was misogyny in the industry, I think. That's the one thing that almost stopped me, but didn't.
So it almost stopped you, but you kept going.
I did. I'm extremely stubborn.
And it's a good thing, because this is spreading now. So
definitely it's a good thing.
And you're also working on a book. How is that coming along, and when can we expect to see something?
I am working on a book. I started it actually 10 years ago. I felt nervous when I really started writing it and realized how much it was evolving quickly. And I didn't want to put a book out and then change my mind on the things that I'd already published. So as I write it and I keep learning, every time I teach this, I learn. So, and I'm probably never going to stop learning. So I'm not sure when I can stop and actually write it and at least say, this is where I am at this point. Because even now I read my thesis and I'm like, oh my gosh, I was so young. And I didn't think anyone would ever read that when I wrote it. I have a book. It's got a lot to it. A lot of my life is part of it. What led me to this and my experiences and how that influenced this. A lot of my experiences in academia and in other places, just stories that need to be told because they shouldn't be happening. But I would expect that probably in the next couple of years, if I can get my kidney transplant, it will clear my brain a little bit more so that I can write. It's hard to write when you have kidney failure. I find you sort of have a fog over your brain. Okay. So, but I have a lot of notes. So, I'm working on it. It might be a few years, though.
Okay. Fair enough. If someone was interested in, you know, bringing a workshop to their local theater or anything like that, how can they go about doing that?
It's really easy. All you have to do is email us. Okay. Go to our website. We have an email for the actual nonprofit has an email that we check, and that's where people just send inquiries about workshops that we all travel. Every one of us does. I barely ever work where I live. So I spend most of my time flying around the country or other countries teaching workshops, and so do my colleagues. So if you need a workshop in Muncie, we can get there for you. You know, we can travel. We also have workshops where people can come to us, and we'll be holding those every 6 months to train the pedagogy behind this.
Okay. And what is the website people can go to find out?
The website is teamidi.org.
Okay, great. And then if someone wanted to get into intimacy directing, what would you say is the best path for that?
Well, you need to have acting experience. You need to study anatomy and movement. So studying the human body, sometimes acting experience can get you there. Sometimes, you know, going to a graduate program where they focus on movement. Stage combat is great. There's lots of different kinds of movement techniques that you can pull to use this. A lot of our intimacy directors come from different backgrounds. Some of them are sex educators. We have a lot of different, like, your domestic violence prevention advocates. So we all have different backgrounds and different things that we advocate for. But we're all teachers, so you need to sort of have some teaching experience, some directing experience, some acting experience, and you have to know mental health first aid so that you can help recognize trauma in the room when you're teaching it and help prevent it. So there's a lot of requirements that we have. We keep our bar really high for our intimacy directors, because as you can imagine, this could go really wrong in the wrong hands. And we don't want to create more problems with the technique that we made. And in the wrong hands, this can be very dangerous work. Yeah. So we want to prevent that. So we really try to vet our intimacy directors. We mentor them directly. I mentor them directly so that they understand the process, they understand the pros and cons. And it's not for everyone. It's very hard work. And you have to be able to separate yourself from the work sometimes. And that can be really, really hard, you know, and you have to be on, you have to be professional, you have to see everything that's happening in the room constantly, you have to be very aware of everyone, where their hands are, where their bodies are, how they're breathing, where their eyes are at all times. So it takes a lot of training to be able to do it and to be able to do it well. And then on top of that, you need to have a really great aesthetic so that the scene looks good. Right. So there is a lot of requirements to it. But if anybody wants to specialize in it, we recommend taking some workshops with us and seeing if you think it fits first, so that, you know, you'll know if it fits, if you're like, I could do this, or if you're like, this is terrifying for me. You know, I can perform it, but I don't think I could be in charge of this, because it is really intimidating, because if things go wrong, you can damage somebody permanently.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty important work in that way.
I think it's crucial.
Definitely. What do you think, what would you hope that people would take away from your workshops or this talk in particular?
I would hope that people would take away that there is a way to do this that doesn't have to traumatize everybody, that we don't have to sacrifice actors for our art. You know, I think that people think of artists as sort of fragile snowflakes that, you know, get damaged, have mental health problems. And a lot of us do have mental health problems. But, you know, we don't need to suffer for our art, for our profession. I think acting is a really dignified profession. And I think that a lot of theater has treated it as if we are the bastard stepchild of the arts, and we put up with a lot when we shouldn't have to. Yeah. You know, we don't treat ourselves with respect, so why is anyone going to respect our art form? So this is really to raise the bar for the whole industry, so that we see theater as the amazing thing it is. It's telling stories that are really important to tell. And when we put all of that stuff aside, then we can really see the beauty behind humanity and not just the negative stuff.
Right. Okay, great. Well, I've been here with Tonya Sina. She's an intimacy director, and we're here at the Great River Shakespeare Festival, where she just did a talk, and you're doing some workshops as well, right?
Yes, I'll be teaching for the next 2 days, and it's going to be extremely fun, hopefully. I think they're a little nervous, but usually they're nervous at first, but then they usually relax after that when they realize it's not scary.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to Tonya Sina for joining us today on ArtBeat. Tonya is the founder and director of Intimacy Directors International. More information can be found at teamidi.org. I'm Bill Stoneberg, and you've been listening to Tonya Sina on ArtBeat.
ArtBeat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.